Now we're holding on page Samach in Baba Basra, about the middle of the page, middle of Ois Lamedes. And we started learning yesterday about how Eyov was complaining that Hashem seems to have confused him for an enemy. The word Eyov and Oyev have the same letters, so maybe the letters got mixed up, and Hashem therefore was treating Eyov like an enemy. In other words, in short, as we learned yesterday, Maharsha says that Eyov is claiming that Hashem does not actually exercise Hashgacha Pratis over the world. So Hashem replies back to Eyov with several examples. From the human body in connection with hairs and connection with nature and connection with rain and thunderstorms, that each thing we see Hashem makes very exact, that each hair has its own follicle, each raindrop has its own channel that comes out of the cloud, each thunderbolt has its own particular path. So now Hashem gives more examples. The pasuk says later on, Hashem continues speaking to Eyov. He says, "Hayadaita es ledes yale sola." Do you know the moment when the mountain goats on the rocks give birth? Cholol ayolas tishmer. Are you able to watch for the moment when the gazelles give birth? So what's going on? What is Hashem talking about specifically those two creatures? So let's start with yalazu. We have the mountain goat. Achzoris al banecho, she's cruel to her children. But Rishar shekeras laledes, when she crouches to give birth, then the mother mountain goat goes to the top of the mountain, Kadesh Tipple and Menavatomus, so that she, the Girsay and Ein Yaakov, which is in parenthesis over here, is Tipple and Menavatomus, she should fall off and die. Now that would mean she's Achzorius dick to herself and to her children, I guess, but the Girsay in the printed Gemara, she Yipple me Menavatomus, that the baby should fall and die. That it should fall. The adult mountain goats, of course, are very sure footed on the mountains, but the baby is not yet, so she does like that. So what happens? Vani mazmin lo nesher. So Hashem says, I prepare in advance an eagle from a kabla b'knafeha, that as soon as she gives birth and the baby starts falling, the eagle comes right at that moment and grabs the baby in its wings, umanicha l'faneha, and places it in front of her. It's neither a moment too early or too late, because if it was even one moment too late, then it would die. Or the Girsay in the printed Gemara in square brackets, if the eagle was there a moment too early, it was a moment too late, miyad mes, then the baby would die, because the eagle wouldn't catch it, the eagle wouldn't catch it in time. So again, being regular is chalafli. So I don't confuse. Hashem says one moment with another, being Eyov or Oyev is chalafli, and you think that I confused Eyov and Oyev. If even the animals, Hashem shows such exquisite hashgacha pratis, time to the moment, then how much more so with people. That's the thing. We have two different girsos over here. The girsa of Ein Yaakov is that the mother is prepared to fall off the rocks and die in childbirth. So that would mean, in other words, that she'd kill herself and her baby. Maybe just the labor pangs are so severe, like she has that natural instinct. The Girsay in the printed Gemara, which we have here in square brackets, is she herself is going to survive, but she wants the baby to fall down and get smashed on the rocks. That's the nature that the Eibush to put into that creature. Throughout those Perakim in Eov, throughout those last several chapters in Eov, when Hashem is speaking to Eov and telling him about different creatures and different things that Hashem made in the world, and do you have any idea even how any of them work? So one of the points Hashem makes a lot over there is different animals are created with different natures. Some of them seem to our eyes to be very foolish. Some of them to seem, as we're saying over here, very cruel. But nevertheless, this is each one of them Hashem implanted a particular nature in it that this is how it works.
It's impossible for it to have that kind of nature.
Well, it's impossible for it to be a predator, but it's possible, as the Gemara is saying over here, for it to be cruel towards its own children. Now, what happens is, when the eagle places the baby in front of her, then she starts feeling a maternal instinct to it, and then she'll take care of it. But at the moment of childbirth, she doesn't have that instinct yet to want to protect that baby. Maharsha points out also, you get down to it, an eagle itself is a predator. Usually, you would expect the eagle sees this defenseless baby, the logical thing it's going to do, the instinctive thing it's going to do is eat it. And instead, it saves it in its wings and puts it down safely in front of its mother. So we see the tremendous Hashgacha Pratis and how Hashem, so it's all the idea that Hashem makes even things that seem to be counterproductive, and that Hashem makes them follow his plans. Shimon Mefoshim point out on the Pesukim, this is one of the big things that Eov goes over and over with in his various speeches and dialogues and everything. He's bothered by the point, you have a large part of the Sefer is all about why is there Rosh of a Tovloi, why is there Tzadik V'Raloi. So one of Eov's big points in many of his speeches is, Mela, fine, we can understand, let's say, a Tzadik V'Raloi. He looks to us like a Tzadik, but really, secretly, he's not. But Rosh of a Tovloi, why? He's a Rosh, Hashem should just get rid of him. And you're going to say because maybe You're going to say you can find various reasons for it. You can say, let's say, for example, it'll upset Bechira Chofshis or whatever if people see that the Rishoyim are punished right away. Fine, but there can be cases. Hashem can easily dispose of the Rishoyim in a way where it won't impinge on Bechira Chofshis. So why doesn't Hashem do that? This is a major theme in a number of Eov's speeches. So now Hashem is telling him, look at these various creatures that I created. You don't begin to understand. Nobody begins to understand why they have the nature they do. It seems very counterproductive, but nevertheless, Hashem says, I created them, and I have a purpose for them in the world. The same thing with the Rishoyim. You may think there's no use for them, and why doesn't Hashem just get rid of them? But you should realize, okay, another example, Hashem continues, the Pasuk continues, Cholel Ayolus Tishmer, can you guard and notice the moment when the gazelle gives birth? So what does this mean? Ayolazu Rachmotzar, the female gazelle has a very narrow womb. A very narrow birth canal. Over Shasha Kiras Leilad, so when it crouches down to give birth, then the Derech HaTeva, the baby would not be able to come out. The Gemara, by the way, in other places also mentions this point, Ayolo Zurach Matzar, in other contexts as well. So the Derech HaTeva, the baby wouldn't be able to come out. So when it's about to give birth, Ani Mazman Lo Darkoin, I make available right there a snake, Shema Kisha Bevesarechem, which bites her in the womb. Umistrapa, and then the muscles loosen, via ledus, and then she's able to give birth. And it's not a moment too early or a moment too late. If it was one moment too early or too late, miyad mesa, then it would die. Too early, and the poison would spread throughout the gazelle, throughout the mother's body. Too late, and the baby is not going to be able to be born. So again, ben regular, regular, nischalafli, it didn't, I don't mix up even one moment with another, ben Eov, Oyev, nischalafli, and you're thinking that I mixed up Eov and Oyev. So here you have the same kind of thing. In other words, Marsha points out that usually a snake's bite would be very deadly, but here on the continent, just like we're saying with the eagle, the Derech HaTeva, you would think that it would eat the newborn baby, and instead it saves it. The same way over here, it's the bite of the snake itself that makes the mother able to give birth. In fact, Maharsha also brings a point in this connection that's mentioned in a medrash that gazelles have a natural immunity to a snake's poison. Or not a natural immunity, but they themselves, parts of a horn of a gazelle, the smoke of it will drive away snakes. So we see also, in other words, that there's this idea, in other words, that particularly the snake is suited to bite the gazelle particularly, and then it gives birth.
Also, there is something that looks to be bad because.
Yes.
She's getting bitten by a snake.
By a snake, right. And it turns out to be a good thing.
With the Nesha. Yes. Taking the baby, but instead of eating it.
Instead of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, actually, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz has in his Sefer of Drosha's Yaris Dvash, he says that also the deeper meaning behind it is that the snake representing the Yetzer Hara, representing the Umas HaOlam, and in particular, sometimes we have, like the gazelle over here, we're not giving birth, we're not ready to do tshuva yet, so the Eibeshitz brings a darka and a snake, Melech Kasher Kahaman, and that forces the issue, and we do tshuva, and then we have the Geula. Hashem is bringing five different examples over here. We learned three of them yesterday and two of them today. The hare, the raindrops, the thunderbolts, the mountain goat, and the gazelle. Ben Yehoyada points out, Eov used the hay motzoris haped, five different organs of speech in the mouth, the five different places of articulation in the mouth, to speak against Hashem. Therefore, Hashem responds to him with five examples that he doesn't know what he's talking about. So, to summarize, we have in one of Elihu's speeches to Eov, he uses the expression, which the Gemara says, this can serve as like a summary of what of everything that Eov is saying. Eov lo b'das yadaber. Eov is not speaking with das, or dvarav lo v'haskil, and his words are not said with intelligence. Now, one way of looking at it is the fact, so we're saying he's not speaking with das, but on the other hand, so far what we've been saying, it's not just a lack of das, it's rishus, he's saying actual apikorsis. So how can the pasuk characterize it as just loy b'das and loy b'haskil? So that's one way of understanding the Gemara's question. The other way is by adding the part in parenthesis over here, which Ein Yaakov had, and in the printed Gemara, it's also in parenthesis. Marshall takes it out, which is why it's printed in the Gemara in parenthesis. It seems that Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom at least didn't have it in their Girsa at all, because they explain the question along those lines, that why are we saying that what he said is loy b'das when it's much worse than that. But anyway, with the parenthesis, uchtiv, then you have, Hashem says to the friends, specifically Hashem says to Eliphaz, I'm very upset with you, ki lo dibartim elay nechona ka'avdi Eov. You did not speak to me correctly like my servant Eov. Now, what do you mean? If Eov is saying apikorsis and all kinds of insulting and things to Hashem, and we said yesterday dirt should be stuffed in his mouth for a variety of things that he said, how can Hashem now turn to Eliphaz and company and say, you didn't speak to me correctly like Eov? So again, there's two different ways of understanding the Gemara's question at this point. One is, why are we calling what Eov says loy b'das and loy b'haskil, when it's much worse than that? And the other way is, how can Hashem say that after all said and done, Eov spoke properly and you did not? From here we learn that a person is not held to account for what he says during his time of tsar, when he's in trouble and pain and distress, like Eov was. Even he says negative things, like we've been saying in all of this Gemara, nevertheless it's not held against him. Therefore, what he says can be called loy b'das. He's not using his das and he's not using his seichel for it, but it's not rishus. The other way, Marshall explains, is it's both. Elihu is saying, you know what, I understand, you're not speaking correctly, but fine, it's only loy b'das and loy b'haskil because you're in pain. Now, Hashem also says to Eliphaz, Hashem kind of endorses what Elihu is saying, and saying, after all said and done, what Eov said is more correct than what you did, because he was in Tsar and you were not, and you didn't speak correctly, because your arguments to try to explain what Hashem is doing are no good, as we see that Eov shot them all down. So, in fact, earlier in the sugya, Rashi had explained when we had the piece over there that said Eov was created, Eov never existed, Elam Moshal Hoya, according to one opinion, Rashi explained the one point of that Moshal is to learn this precise point, that Eidon Nitpas B'Shas Tzarei, that we can't hold, even though we go through chapters upon chapters of Eov, and we just went through a whole sugya over here saying many bad and negative things that he said, nevertheless, a lesson, a takeaway we can take from the Sefer is this Eidon Nitpas B'Shas Tzarei. Going back to the beginning of the Sefer now, the pasuk says Vayishmu Shloishes Reya Eov. So after all of these disasters hit Eov, both the ones that affected his possessions and children, and the ones that affected his own body, so now it says Eov's three friends heard what happened, and they all came to gather together to visit him. So the pasuk says that they heard Vayivadu Yachtov, and they gathered together to go and commiserate with Eov and try to make him feel better. So Vayivadu Yachtov, what is that expression, Vayivadu, which literally means they gathered together? Vayivadu is like from the word moed. It almost means like they made an appointment to come together. So what does that mean? The Rif points out part of the question is how do they live in different places, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, how do they manage to all make it there at the same time so that we can say on it Vayivadu? So Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Malamad Shenichnesu Kulam B'Shar Echad, means that all of them came in one gate. In fact, Marashah points out the gate is usually the Mekoyim Havad. That's usually where the meetings of the local Beistin would take place. So it means that they, so to speak, they became a Beistin, the three of them together, and therefore they all came to Shar Echad. They're all ready to come here and all work on judging and helping out Eov however they can. The Tana, now we learn in a Braisa, Each one of them lives 300 pausa away from the other. Marshall points out that why 300? First of all, sometimes the Gemara does use 300 in an exaggerated sense, so it doesn't literally mean 300 necessarily, but still, Marshall points out that the gematria of the words in the pasuk lovoi lonud loyo lanachmoi, which means they came to shake their head in sympathy for him and to comfort him, the gematria of those four words equals 300. So therefore, that hints that they live each 300 parasa away from the other. Ion Yaakov brings an idea that how does each one live 300 parasa away from the other? If they live in a square, then the ones on the corners of the square are going to be more than 300 parasa apart from one another. So he says, let's say one of them was living on top of a mountain, and the other three were living an equal distance away from each one of them. So it's like you have almost like a pyramid kind of. Ben Yehoyada says something along similar lines as well. So they were very far apart. Well, the question is, Menahavu Yadi. Well, in that case, then, how did they know what happened to Eod, that they all came and they came and then they, in fact, even came at the same time? So Ika Da'amri clearly have a little. One answer is that they had crowns. Each crown, Rashi describes, had images, pictures of the faces of the other three friends on it. So Eod would have a crown that had the faces of Eliphaz, Bildad, and Sofar. Eliphaz would have one that had Eod, Bildad, and Sofar, and so forth. So each one had all three. And then if one of them is beset by Yisurim, then the face will change. Now, how does such a thing work? It's funny, you know, the Mephoshim talk about how could such a thing work. Nowadays, when we living in 2026, it's a lot easier to understand how you can have 300 parasa or even more apart and still things can change at a distance. But with what they had in those times, Samar Shah says they may have done it with Kishuf. Now, we learned earlier, we had the whole question whether Eov and his friends were Goyim or Jews. If they were Goyim, then they were allowed to do Kishuf. The Gemara discusses an opinion in Sanhedrin that they're not allowed to do kishuf, but the halacha is not like that. So they would be allowed to. There is a shach in Yeridaya that says maybe in certain cases of pikuach nefesh you're even allowed to use kishuf, but this wouldn't be pikuach nefesh per se. When something happens, then yeah, but yeah. That's one possibility. Ben Yehoyada talks about there are certain more naturalistic ways of it. He describes, for example, that there are certain precious stones that have that property of where they change because of things that happen at a distance. So again, with modern electronics, it's much easier to understand. But it would have been possible. So that's one version. The Ikadami Iloni Havalahu. Another version is that it wasn't crowns, but rather they had trees. Each one had trees that are labeled with the names of the other three friends. Kiven to Kamshi, and if one particular tree starts withering, Havu Yadi, then they know there's something wrong with the friend whose name is on that tree. So that way, this way they can know right away what's going on over here. Marsha points out, you know, when we had earlier in the sugya, we had an opinion that when Moshe tells the Meraglim Hayesh Ba'etz, is there a tree in Eretz Yisrael? He meant is there a great tzaddik whose chus protects them? And the answer is yes, there had been Eod, but now he died. Well, that fits very well with this, that he's represented by a tree in the houses of his three friends, and therefore and as long as the tree is healthy, then you know he's healthy as well, and if not, then not. So the Gemara says, Omar Rabba, Hainu da Amri Inshi. This is like the expression. People say, Oy Chavra, Chavre de Eov. Either a person has friends like the friends of Eov, who among other things are ready to drop everything and come to see him and come hundreds of parasa away to see him and to help him. Oy Misusa, and if not, then a person is better off dead. Without friends like that. In particular, friends like that, you know, one thing actually, it's interesting, you know, you have the expression by Yvadu Yachtav. That kind of puts this in mind of the word hisvadu, it says in a Fabrengen. you get down to it, really, in a way. The whole Sefer Iyov is a Fabrengen between Iyov and his friends. You know, like this. Nowadays, a lot of times the Fabrengen is not what it used to be. You know, you look in the writings of the Friedrich Rebbe and of the Uliyah Rebbe, and you find the description of a Fabrengen is we're not just sitting tell over Sipurik Siddim and drink and say L'chaim or whatever. It's a time when one chassid turns to the other and says, you know, there's areas in Avoida that you need to improve in. He does it in a way, as a, you know, to use the metaphor the Friedrich Rebbe tells one time when he was in a sanatorium and they had to inject him with a needle. You first have to clean off the needle very carefully and clean off the skin very carefully, make sure there's nothing personal that's getting involved over there, but still, the needle has to be stuck in. That's what a Fabrengen is. So that's what a Fabrengen should be, at least. So in a way, the whole dialogue between Iyov and the friends, that's they're saying, in fact, there's an explanation along these lines, that here, look, the Gemara had just said, Einonim nitvas v'shas tzare. Hashem is not going to hold Iyov responsible for all the negative things that he's saying in a time like this. But his friends are not going to allow that to slide. They're going to still stick in the needle. They're going to still tell him, Iyov, this isn't who you're supposed to be. So in that sense, to have friends like a person needs to have friends like that that keep him on the right path. And the Gemara is saying, and Rava is saying, oh,
you mean friendship or give me debt? Is that what it said?
But it's saying more than that. Not just any friendship, but friendship like the friends of Iyov, who, as Maharal Shor points out, are ready to come hundreds of parasa to see him. And as we're saying also, that they're not just going to see him like this. The Pasuk says they came loyal. They're going to shake their heads in sympathy for him, and they're going to comfort him. But now we see in the body of the Sefer that it's not just they came to comfort him, they actually come to, once they hear what Iyov is saying, and they hear that he's denying Ashgaha Pratis, and denying various fundamental concepts of Yiddishkeit, then they right away, no, we're not going to let that slide. We need to tell you, we need to stick in that needle. We need to give you that injection and tell you, you know what, Iyov, this is not who you are.
Give me freedom.
There is, by the way, an interesting vote on it from Rabbi Yonis and Ibershitz. He says like this, you know, you have, the Gemara tells us in Brachos that if a person finds his Yetzirah is overpowering him, he should go and learn Torah. As we had in this sugya itself, where Hashem tells Iyov, where Eliphaz tells Iyov, you know, Barossi la Torah tavlin, you have a Yetzirah, but you have the Torah as an antidote to it. And the Gemara goes on to say there, if that doesn't help, then say Krishna. And if even that doesn't help, then Yazkul or Yamamobis, then a person should remind himself that eventually he's going to die, and that's like the ultimate weapon against the Yetzirah. So there's a vote on it. Rabbi Yonis and Ibershit says, what Robert is saying over here, if a person has good friends like Iyov who can help him tame his Yetzirah, then good. If not, he may be left with the only alternative is to remind himself that he's going to die, and that way keep his Yetzirah at bay. But better, he should have friends who will help him with that, as to use the Mitzvah Rebbe's expression, two Nefesh HaLakis against one Nefesh HaBahamis, so in this case, four Nefesh HaLakis against one Nefesh HaBahamis, and that would be much better. Okay. Now, at the end of Sefer Iyov, it tells how, again, it says about how Hashem restored everything that Iyov had twice as much as before. So he had twice as many cattle, twice as many camels, etc. And then the Pasuk mentions his children as well. The expression of this, so now the Gemara is going to mention something, the Gemara is going to bring something else in by way of introduction into getting to that point. The Pasuk says that he had Shiv'ona Vonim V'Sholosh Bonas. Shiv'ona is some Mephoroshim said, so to begin with, at the beginning of the Sefer, he has seven sons and three daughters. Some of the Mephoroshim explain that Shiv'ona is just another way of saying Shiva, so it means at the end as well, he had seven sons and three daughters. That wasn't doubled. Others say that Shiv'ona means that he had twice seven, so in that case, he had 14. Within that also, Mephoroshim discussed, do we mean that his original children were killed, like the messenger comes and tells him in Perek Aleph, and now, at the end of the Sefer, now he gets new children. I mean, it's very nice, I suppose, but it still doesn't mean you can't. Children are not something replaceable like the way animals or gold or silver or whatever are. So there are a number of Mephoroshim who explain that actually, to begin with, they weren't killed. The Sutton made it look like they were killed, but he spirited them away and they were hidden, and now they get out of the clutches of the Sutton and they're able to come back and then Iyov has them again. But again, whether he has the same number of boys and girls as before, or whether he had double the number of boys, different Mephoroshim talk about that. But everybody, what?
Kidnapped and held
hostage, basically, and now, yeah. Is it what? Not a chesed. Once the whole thing is over, once the time for Iyov's Yisurim are over, then everything has to, yeah. Psukim also makes the point that we talked about before, that Eov davened for his friends after Hashem tells Eliphaz and company that I'm angry at you because you didn't speak to me correctly the way Eov did. So he tells them, you have to go ask Eov to daven on your behalf, otherwise I'm going to punish you. And Eov does, and as we learned in Bava Kamma, Mispallah Chaberu Nenetchila, first davens for somebody else, he himself is answered first, and therefore Hashem restored all of Eov's fortunes.
With the son taking kids, it says that Hashem gives but doesn't take back, except in
Okay, so.
How does that work? That doesn't take away children.
So again, the idea was he didn't take them away. He hid them away. You thought they were dead, but they weren't.
He hid them away.
Yeah, they were taken hostage, like Yossel said. Yeah. Okay. Everybody agrees, though, that the number of daughters was not doubled, and he started out with three daughters, and now also he has three daughters. So, in this connection, the Gemara brings the following. The Pasuk says, before the Mabul, it happened as mankind was increasing in the world, and daughters were born to them. So what is this word? Now, the word laroiv can be from one of two shoshim. It can be related to the word rov as in many, or the word riv as in argument. So Rabbi Yechanan says when daughters were born, then it means more multiplication, more fertility comes to the world. Rashi points out girls mature faster than boys do, which is why a girl becomes mature at 12 and a boy at 13, which is why you have bas mitzvah at 12 and bar mitzvah at 13. So the more women you have, the more revia that you have, because they're able to give birth earlier. Marshall points out another thing as well. You get down to it, the amount of fertility, the amount of children that can be born in a society depends on the number of women that are there. Because each woman can only be pregnant at one time, as opposed to a man can have relations with, can be married to a lot of women. So the limiting factor is the number of women. So the more women there are, the more period of revia there is, says Rabbi Yochanan. Reb Shimon Lakish, on the other hand, says the Pasuk is telling us that there was more arguing and fighting in the world. Because men fight over women, and the women themselves, as Rat Marshall refers to the Gemara about Eza Kenegdo, that a woman sometimes opposes her husband, so therefore Reb Shlokish looks at it that way. Rish Lakish says to Reb Yechanan, see, listen, you're saying that having more girls is a good thing. You're saying the Pasuk is hinting the more girls there are was a good thing. Well, in that case, well, then why weren't the number of Eov's daughters doubled? Evidently, Rish Lakish is following the way of looking at it, as again some Mephoshim do, that Shivana Vanim means 14 boys instead of the 7 that there were before. But the Pasuk clearly says Rishalish Vanis and 3 daughters. Same as at the beginning, there were 3 daughters. So Mela, according to me, that daughters are not such a bracha, then fine, we understand why Hashem gave Eov the same number of daughters as before. Again, whether it's the same girls or different one, that's a different question. But if you're telling me, Rabbi Yechanan, that girls are a bracha, then why doesn't Eov now have 6 daughters? Amalei, so Rabbi Yechanan answers him, it's true they're not doubled in the number of names. There were 3 girls rather than 6. But they're doubled in their beauty. They're twice as beautiful as before, and therefore it actually says that's the best possible kefil, that's the best possible doubling. Maushah here talks about Maushah says that is one of the Mephoshim who learns that the sons and daughters were not killed, they were actually saved and they were hidden away, they were kept hostage by the Sultan, if you want to call it that. What it would mean is that. So to begin with, he had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Now, Maharshal is learning, he had another 7 sons and another 3 daughters. So in fact, he does end up having double in the children as well, 14 and 6, the original 7 and 3 that survived the whole disaster in the first place, plus another 7 and 3 that are born afterwards. But still, the question is, then Rish Lakish's question is, why doesn't the Pasuk list the names of the 3 daughters, but according to that, if there were 6 in the end, why doesn't it list the name of all 6 of them? And the answer is the second 3 that were born So in other words, if you say they died, then fine. They died and they're out of the picture, therefore we don't name them. But now if we're saying that he has the three from before and the three new ones, then why are only the three new ones named? And the answer is that they were doubly as beautiful. And their names indicate how beautiful they were. As the pasuk says, "Vayhi lo shivana vanim v'shalosh banos." He had 7 or 14 sons, depending on how you learn the word shivana, and 3 daughters. "Vayikra shema achas Yemima." He named one of the daughters Yemima, and the Gemara is going to explain in a second what these names indicate. "The shema shenis Ketziah." The second one he named Ketziah. "The shema shlishis Keren Hapuch." And the third one he named Keren Hapuch. So, what do these names indicate? Yemima, she's called Choset Doimel Yoim. She was as beautiful and bright as the daylight, as clear as beautiful and luminous as the sun. Ketziah is called that Choyerecha Noidif Ketziah. She was as fragrant as Ketziah, which is one of the spices in the Torah, Moro Ketziah. Kerenapuch, what about the third one who was known? What about the third one who was named Kerenapuch? What does that name mean? Ami Dvei Reb Shila. So in the yeshiva, Reb Shila said. Then in the yeshiva of Reb Shila, they said it means Shadoyim la Karen of the Keresh. It means that her beauty resembled that of the horn of a Keresh. Rashi explains a Keresh is a type of animal that has black or dark colored horns. So therefore, see, she resembled that in beauty.
She's not the unicorn.
Maybe a Keresh. Rashi over here says Karneha. It's horns in plural. So maybe not. But yeah, it's true. There is a Gemara in Shabbos that seems to say that the Keresh has one horn. Yeah. In any case, Mechaku Alavim Arava, but they laughed on that in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara elsewhere explains that that's specifically Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina, who was one of the Amoroim in Eretz Yisrael, laughed at that and said, "How can that be? Karen de Keresh Lakusahu, to be compared in coloration to the horn of a Keresh is a defect because it's dark colored. So it would mean the girl is dark complexion. That's not beautiful." Ela Omer of Chista. So rather, of Chista says that the word Keren Hapuch means Kikurkuma Derishka B'minei. Means she was as beautiful as the best kind as garden saffron, which is the best kind of saffron. Saffron is a spice. It's also one of the ingredients in the Torah. That's karkoim. So she was as beautiful, as fragrant as that, and that kind of garden karkoim, garden saffron is the best kind. This is all according to Rashi. Marsha brings a different explanation Tosfos has a different gusa, not kikurkuma, like saffron, but rather kikuchla, like eyeshadow. So now eyeshadow is also a dark color. It's a dark blue color. Again, that wouldn't be the coloration of her skin. So Tosfos explains according to that what it would mean is that the same way as the best kind of eyeshadow or face paint makes a woman look extra beautiful, the same way this girl Keren Hapuch was much more beautiful. Was exceptionally beautiful compared to other women. So according to Rashi's explanation, the reason we call Keren Hapuch would mean Keren means a corner, meaning in other words, like the saffron grows in the corner of the garden where there's more room for it to spread out, and therefore it becomes more beautiful. According to Tosfos, the vote would be that Koran Miloshen. Moshe's face was luminous and gave off rays of light, and the same way that she her appearance gave off rays of light because she was very beautiful. As we find a pasuk that talks about the beauty of Puch, the pasuk says even if you make your eyes look larger with Puch, so we see in other words that Puch is a cosmetic that women look to, that women use to look more beautiful. And therefore, so she also was more beautiful than other women. So that's the point. In other words, so you could say that in fact Eve did have at the end 6 daughters, the 3 who were there originally, who came back after the whole episode, plus another 3. But the reason why the pasuk names only those last 3 is because they were exceptionally beautiful. So not only did he have 6 daughters where before he had 3, but 3 of them are much more beautiful than other women.
I guess
we would assume that the Ruchnius mirrors it as well, yeah. So in this connection, speaking about boys and girls, the Gemara says, Rav Shimon ben Rebbe is yilidulei brata. Rav Shimon ben Rebbe had a daughter, and he was feeling bad. Now, later on in the Masechta, actually, it talks about there can be an advantage in having a girl first. The Gemara later on has the expression, Bas Tchila Simen Yofel Lebanim. A person has, a couple has a daughter first. In a way, it's a good simen for boys for a number of reasons. One of them is a practical matter. Anybody who has older girls know they help around the house more than older boys do. Nevertheless, though, Reb Shimon ben Rebbe felt bad about it. One reason why he would have felt bad is that Danny Hoyoda points out, you know, it means he missed out being able to do a Pidyon HaBen. He missed out a mitzvah. In any case, Omalei Avua, sort of Shimon Rebbe's father, Rebbe tells him, don't worry, Revia no de lechor baal olam, like Rebbe Yochanan had said before, increase has come to the world. The more girls there are, the more increase, the more period of Revia there is in the world. However, Omalei Bakapara, however, Bakapara says to Rav Shimon ben Rebbe, Tanchumen shel hevel nichem achavucha. You should know, your father gave you a comfort, useless comfort. He said, what he's saying is not really, there is a certain validity to it, of course, but it's not really it. The one point is, going back to this idea about, that. Going back to this idea before that Maharsha had said, that the more girls there are, the more increase there can be in the world, because again, the limiting factor is the number of women. On the other hand, Mephoshim point out another way of looking at it is another way of looking at it is that's true in the as far as society as a whole. On the other hand, if you look at it from the point of view of an individual father, the more boys he has, the more possibility he has of having more and more descendants for the opposite reason. So therefore, Sabakapara is telling Rav Shimon ben Rebbe, as much as your father is trying to comfort you, you should realize that really your tackle would have been better off having a boy and having more boys. Marshall makes this point over here, and he goes into a little arichos over here about we find with Hevel and Kayin and their respective twin sisters. And after all, I mean, Marshall points out, you know, listen, Bakapare is aware that you need to have a boy and a girl in order to be Makayim Puruvu, so he's not putting down entirely the idea of having girls, but he's saying your father isn't trying to make you feel better. That you had a girl first, it's not really all that it's at. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, the world can't exist without there being both males and females. Nevertheless, Oilo the Misha Bonav Nakavis, woe to a person whose children are females. Ashri Misha Bonav Schorim, fortunate is the one whose children are males. Now, obviously, in one sense, the Gemara is saying over here in the simple sense, because that's what Bakapara is saying. On the other hand, and we've talked about this before, for example, it means the idea is a boy is a symbol of being Mashpia, a girl of Makabel, so it means happy is the person whose children are boys, whether they're actually biologically boys or girls, but they have the capability of being a Mashpia, which is a male characteristic, and therefore good for a person who has that. Ola the Misha Bonim Nakavis, and woe when they're only Mekablim and not Mashpiyim. So you have also boys have a mitzvah of learning Torah, girls don't, so you have that as well. So for that matter, the Gemara points out in Sanhedrin, for example, that girls, especially back then, were throughout a father's life, he constantly has various worries about his girls. What's going to happen to them when they're little? What's going to happen to them as far as shidduchim? What's going to happen to them as far as having children, etc.? So therefore, you have much less of those worries with boys.
They can be divorced
by Korcham. Back in those days, yeah. Similarly, E.F. Shalom, Bled Basim of Ledbursky. Similarly, the world can't make do without perfumers and without tanners. Nevertheless, Nevertheless, woe to the person whose occupation is to be a tanner, where he always smells bad, Asher, the Mishra Munusid Basim, and fortunate is the person who gets to have the job of a perfumer, of a spice dealer, where he always has a good fragrance around him. So in other words, in short, Bakapara is telling Rav Shimon ben Rebbe, fine, you know, we're not saying that having a girl is a completely negative thing, but nevertheless, it's true that objectively you might have been better off having a boy first. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Yud Ches Shabbat, So the Rebbe talks about in a sicha that's very clear that our generation is the last generation of Golos and the first generation of Gola. And we know that because back in the day, in Tavshin Aleph, Tavshin Days, the Friedrich Rebbe was announcing, la'alta l'truva, la'alta gola gola, immediate truva, will bring immediate gola. And the Friedrich Rebbe also announced, imdu hochen kochem, everybody stand and be ready to kabbalas pnei Mashiach tzidkenu. And that was actually in a letter from before, that was actually from the end of the Tafresh Sadiqs. And now, decades have passed since then, so we have to be a lot closer, we have to be, that Mashiach really is right here now. Miyad mamash. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis and the talus, so we talked about, now, today I've talked about two opinions, whether you need to wrap your head in the talus or not. One opinion is that because the bracha is like after the tzitzis, therefore you have to wrap yourself like the Yishma'elim do, and therefore you would have to, the whole time, you'd have to have your talus wrapped around your head and covering much of your face. The other opinion was that the whole concept of ituf, even though it's in the bracha, is not in the pasuk, and therefore it's not really necessary. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe said the best thing to do is wrap your head, tatifasei Yishma'elim, put the one corner over from one shoulder over to the other, and stand like that for four amos, and that way you're yotze both opinions. So now the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, similarly as far as a talus cotton. Now, a person is yotze, so the accepted opinion is we are yotze the mitzvah of tzitzis with it, even though it's not big enough for ituf, even though it's not big enough and it's not, we don't wear it in a way of ituf, nevertheless the majority, the accepted opinion is that it is a valid way of doing the mitzvah of tzitzis. Nevertheless, if a person wants to be yotze, according to all opinions, then and if he wants to say at least after tzitzis on a talus cotton, then what he should do is he should put it on at first over his head and have the width of it go down his back, which is again the normal way of wrapping himself up, wrap himself in it, stand like that at least 4 amos, and then he can put it on normally with his head into the hole. There's a Kuntres Akron over here where the Alter Rebbe goes on and explains that detail, that basically exactly that. If he does that, if he wraps his head and then much of his body with it, then he'll be able to say the bracha v'sata for tzitzis. Now, on the other hand, the Tzemach Tzedek brings up questions as far as this, and he says that what you should do is, if you want to do what the Alter Rebbe is saying over here, don't make the bracha before you wrap your head and body in the talus cotton. Do it after you still stand, when you're standing in that position, then make the bracha and then immediately put on the talus cotton in the normal way. Lemaisa, actually, what we do is once a man starts wearing a talus gadol, then we don't make the bracha on the talus cotton anymore at all. Later on in the sif, the Alter Rebbe is going to talk about the bracha al mitzvah tzitzis. So only boys who are below the age are putting on unmarried boys and unmarried men before the age are putting on a talus. Then they say the bracha al mitzvah tzitzis, and they don't wrap themselves first in the talus cotton. They just say al mitzvah tzitzis, that the Alter Rebbe is going to go on to say. And then when we make the bracha, the sata patitis on the talus gadol, then we have in mind the talus cotton as well. So now the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, when you have what we think of as a talus cotton that has a hole in the middle for the neck, so then therefore, so that can be called, so now if a person wraps his head and most of his body in it, then it would be he'd have two tzitzis on one side and two on the other. But let's say, for example, the garment is sewn. So let's say one example would be the undershirt tzitzis that they sell nowadays. Or other similar things. Now, if a person wraps his head and most of his body in it, all four tzitzis are going to be on one side, and the Alter Rebbe is going to explain later on in Siman Yud that that's not the right way to do it. So therefore, what you should just do is, to begin with, put it on the normal way, not wrap it around your head, don't say v'yisata v'tzitzis, just say al-mitzvah tzitzis. And that's l'maisa what we do. Then, similarly, even a regular talus cotton that is rectangular and not sewn up and it has the hole in the middle, same thing. If the person is just putting on normally and not wrapping himself in it, then he also says, I'm mitzvah. So in short, even though in principle the Alter Rebbe is saying you could make your bracha, you would be able to have a way in which you can say l'isatapatitis on a talus cotton, namely by first wrapping your head and most of your body and part of your body in it, nevertheless the mice, that we don't see people doing that, and people just, when they're putting on a talus cotton before marriage, they say, and after marriage they don't say that bracha again, and they just say leisata fatzitzis on the talus gadol, and they have in mind to be motzi the talus cotton with it as well. Okay.